Hey there, drafts people. To help fill the void and the lack of episodes in your draftsman feed, we're rewinding back to 5 Proko Classic interviews and 1 new one. You're listening to this new mini-series where we take a deep dive into the lives, journeys, and minds of some of the most fascinating artists and instructors, from fine art masters to comic legends. First up is Carl Kapinski. Carl is one of the cool kids with Super Annie, and he got his start working on Warhammer and Magic the Gathering. This was a particularly fun one. I don't think I've ever laughed as hard in any other interview. So get ready. Here we go.
We're cutting out everything except the sex jokes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't We're do only the thing keeping... about the s***ing I think that was a step too far.
I think it was. I was like, holy crap. It's the draftsman show. Yeah. Gosh, why are you trying to get away from me?
It was the coffee breath. Eggs and coffee, it smells like.
Are you serious?
No.
Like crap. I had eggs and coffee.
Did you?
Yes. Like, how did you know? Is it that bad?
I've laughed too much now. My face is aching.
Yeah. You look wonderful.
Thank you. I like you.
Better than I expected.
Really?
I saw a bunch of videos of you and you're all...
Whoa. That guy's a mess.
Yeah, how are we going to make this work? You want to start the interview?
Yeah, let's start.
Okay. So last time we talked, you wanted to talk about discipline, right?
Like, can I talk about how I discipline my kids?
You can talk about whatever you want. And I,
because that's I'll where I get it ingrained. You know, if it works on them, it'll work on me.
When did you have kids?
Oh, when I was quite old. I think I was 35.
35.
When we had our first child. I was actually in house at Games Workshop studio, and I left when my wife was pregnant to go freelance, and that's when it all went kind of crazy for me.
What do you mean crazy?
Well, because Games Workshop, you were sort of in a little bubble. You weren't exposed to the outside world, especially. You were just part of the team.
Right.
So you had no idea of how other artists regarded you, other industry artists. So that was quite a revelation when I actually left and people knew my name and you know that you were quite well regarded as an artist. It seemed to me over time that there was a lot of guys who grew up loving, say, Games Workshop games. Uh-huh. And now they're working in the industry and they're like, oh, let's get that old guy who we used to love when we were 8. And then Magic the Gathering as well has been a sort of, you know, cause that's quite a global phenomenon, really. Yeah. So, you know, I think that kind of helps spread the
word. They're still releasing your cards, right?
Yeah. So,
are those old paintings?
No, I mean, I just finished one before I came here. I've just been commissioned another, but I've had to really rein it in because things have gone a bit crazy with the social media and,
you know. You're getting popular.
Yeah, like really way more popular than I thought ever possible. When I wanted to be popular, I wasn't popular. You know, like when you're trying to meet girls and that, nobody gave a shit about Carl.
I've been with my wife for like 16 years now.
Ah, that's good.
I was never really in the dating game.
No?
No.
Straight in.
Just
efficient.
Oh, done.
Yeah. I found one, that's fine. Let's leave it here till we die.
Yeah, I don't want to take my chances.
Yeah, yeah. Could go
I'll
wrong.
Keep this one.
Yeah, you'll do. Yeah, I'm pretty popular on there.
We'll keep that. We'll just isolate that quote. Yeah, I'm pretty popular. Deal with it.
Yeah, so deal with it. Yeah.
So, but then when did you start getting discipline in your training?
Well, if I rewind to my sort of college days, as it were, university days, I was huge. I was always drawing as a kid, really sort of obsessively. Then I went to university thinking, well, I'm going to do a fine art course. It's going to be amazing. They'll teach me everything. And I was incomprehensibly disappointed in my...
Which school?
It was a place in the northeast of England. It was actually that year, there were 90 fine art courses and it ranked 80. Oh. Second.
So it wasn't an art school, it was just like a university?
It was a university fine art course, and it was like my third choice. I didn't get in at my first choice. So okay. I was pretty mediocre, bit of a failure at college, really. So it was that experience, and also, really, I wasted a lot of years there. because I got so disillusioned, I stopped drawing almost completely and just hanging out, growing dreadlocks and, you know, not doing the things I should have been doing. So the discipline comes from that life experience. Like, you come out the other side, I was like, I've got to sort this out now. Because I knew I was okay at drawing, but it started to dawn on me quite quickly that I needed to put some hard work in and learn this. And I'm still frustrated. You know, we're talking with Jisoo and Hyunjin and Jonggi just the other night, and, you know, they've got a really rigid teaching system, and it's very much not unlike what you're doing. You know, there's a lot of stuff where people are learning the real bones of it and the real basics of anatomy and fundamentals of perspective and things like that. And I skipped all of, nobody taught me that. So I always feel like I'm playing catch up. You know, if I meet young people asking how to improve, then I really encourage them. You've got to go back and learn this. It's like the foundations of a building. If you don't build it up, then for me, I had to kind of knock it down and go back and start again, which is frustrating. And it's also inefficient.
Well, it doesn't seem like it from your work.
Smoke and mirrors, man. Smoke and mirrors.
So how did you make it work? Like, how did you, without studying perspective, or did you study perspective on your own from books?
And books, yeah, okay. Yeah. And like, even when I was a kid before I went to uni, in fact, it's actually really funny because I'm looking at your book collection there, I'm like, I've got that one, I've got that one, I've got that one, I've got that one. And a hell of a lot of those books that you've got, I bought and studied from. There was, you know, even Grey's Anatomy, which is ostensibly a medical book. And I went through this thing, just page after page. A lot of it, I was interested in biology as a kid as well, and animals. So a lot of it was an interest rather than let's learn this.
Right.
So there was a fundamental there, but I wasn't being disciplined about my learning. I was just interested in it. And then I had another book that was called Anatomy for Artists, which made what I was interested in a lot more applicable.
Which one, Anatomy for Artists? Was it Goldfinger or?
It was one by maybe Hungarian artist, and you had a section of human anatomy and then several sections afterwards of like a bear, chimpanzee. It was a really cool book, one of these lucky finds. And I went through that and really studied that. But, you know, I don't know the muscles of the back as much as I should. And, you know, there's a lot that I still need to learn.
Perfect. We're going to have you draw a Wolverine from behind.
From the back?
Yeah.
I'll just put a big coat on him.
No, you can't. You're going to cover it with fur.
Yeah. Hairy Wolverine.
Hairy Wolverine. There you go.
We'll do Wolverine before back, sack and crack. Do you know that?
What?
That's a waxing in England. Back, sack,
whack?
Crack.
Ah, oh, jeez.
Sorry, I do apologize.
Don't. It's good for us, bad for you.
Yeah, it's terrible for me.
Did cycling help with the discipline? Or when did you start cycling?
Well, over the years, I've had some medical sort of circulatory issues come up where they're like, you need to keep moving.
Okay.
So I started cycling a little bit just because I knew I was basically sat at the desk or hunched over, or, you know, this kind of thing. So I started doing it just to get some exercise. And then, like a lot of artists I meet, I'm an obsessive, like really obsessive. And so once I started to enjoy it, I'm like, right, I need to get good at this, and I need this bike, and I need...
Yeah.
And but what I've found has been really helpful is, especially as I've got better and I've done a bit of training and racing, is that it's helped with the discipline. And I like it as well because it's a bit like being in the company of these guys. There's nowhere to hide. They know if you're not good at drawing, they know. You can't bluff your way through this. And cycling is very much like that, especially if you hit like a mountain or a climb. All the nice, flashy lycra, shaved legs, you know, looking cool. Yeah, you've got to shave your leg.
Yeah.
All that means nothing once you hit the mountain, because if you haven't done the work, you're out the back and you're having the most hideous day of your life. But no, it's been really good. And what I've also found with it that is really useful, because I'm getting older now, I'm 48. So, it's awful, isn't it? Nearly over, very nearly over. But, two
years.
Or 3 years. Yeah. But no, what I've found is it's actually helped my energy levels. I cycle 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. So most days, even if I do like only an hour or two, it's usually pretty hard, you know, training. And I find that I can put longer hours in the day. So I put maybe 10, 12 hours in drawing. Before cycling, I couldn't do that. Like 6 hours, I was tired.
Yeah, that's how I am.
Yeah.
No, after 6 hours of drawing, I'm done. I can't. My brain just can't handle
more. Yeah, yeah. But what also I've found that's useful is I have a big variety of projects on the go. So I'll maybe have an oil painting, like the cycling paintings where they're really loose, and then I have the sketches that I'm doing, and then I have some work for magic or computer game, and then I can flip between. So if I really feel like my brain's a bit fried from doing that, then I'll just switch to something else. Okay. And make the call and say, no, I'm not going to hit the deadline this. Yeah. So, you know, but it's helped a lot.
Do you sleep less now? Because after cycling?
I think maybe a little bit. And also I've got kids and they don't let you sleep.
Well, did you start cycling after you had kids?
Yeah. So before I had kids, life was just one big party. Now, I used to play basketball actually a lot before I had kids. I was playing basketball at British level, which in the US you have to understand is pretty low.
I played basketball too.
Did you?
As a kid. My team was the worst team in the league. Literally the worst. And I was the worst player on my team. I would always kind of stay back. And whenever somebody would like rebound, I would already be on like the other side of the court, like, yeah, come on. And they would throw it to me. I'd be like wide open. Layup. Miss every time.
Oh, God.
I don't know why they kept throwing it to me.
Just the enthusiasm in your face, isn't it? I'll give him the ball. Yeah.
So that's...
Oh, that's good. That's, yeah, I'm pretty cool. Much that level, actually.
Really?
We should go have a game.
Anything else about how you trained?
Well, yeah, I did a lot of life classes, actually, after... Oh. Yeah, when I...
Life drawing from
my mom. Life drawing. So
okay. When
I was at uni, they had life classes. But you'd go and there'd be like one other person there and the same model they had every week. Next week, it looked like she'd never moved from last week.
Oh, was it the same pose every time?
No, just nobody cared. She'd just rock up, take the money, lie down, and people had to draw her. So it was, there was no, not even any teaching in there. It was just offered.
Just open workshop sort of thing.
So what I did afterwards was I actually started going to a local class with one of the other artists from Games Workshop, who I really admire, a guy called Paul Dainton, whose works. When he came into the studio, I was really intimidated by him because he was like super high level.
Yeah.
And as we got to know each other, we had very similar interests, talked about, you know, all the guys who are on your bookshelf, Sargent, Soroya, Repin, you know, Kramskoy, all these Fetchin, all these guys who we sort of really geek out about. And so we started going to this life class together. It was just wonderful. I absolutely loved it. I don't go so much anymore because it's further away from where I live, but they did I think it was an 8-hour pose, 2 hours over 4 weeks. And it was just long enough to do a pretty decent oil painting from. And I'd go and try out my Zorn palette and, you know, look at Sargent paintings before I went along. And I love that idea that doing something so simple, it's like, you set up, you want that on there. And that's it. There's no art directors, nobody busting your balls, telling you, can you make him a bigger gun or, you know, change that rim light? It's just a very simple exercise. So you can be totally focused, totally and completely concentrating on what you're doing there. And I think also the other thing that it teaches you, which I found invaluable and I've actually noticed I'm missing a bit now. Because I don't think you hold on to it. I think you've got to train it. You've got to keep doing it. Is the observational skills. You've got to really focus. It's not just, oh, yeah, that's an arm. You've got to be so intensely focused on what you're doing that it really heightens your observational skills and your ability to take that and place it in whatever medium you're doing.
It seems like you're good at both. Drawing from life through observation and drawing from imagination. A lot of artists struggle with either one or the other, mostly from imagination.
That's
you know, a lot of artists train from a model, from drawing from books, from photographs, and then they're like, wait, I can't draw from imagination. So when did you make that transition? And how?
It was quite, I mean, as a kid, I was always drawing Tarzan and actually.
From your head?
Yeah.
On TV?
Because we didn't have a lot of money, so I didn't really have, or maybe go to the library and borrow a, it was things like Asterix and Obelix and Tintin and things like that. But really, from my head. And so, you know, I was drawing Spider-Man and, you know, all these kind of things from the late 70s, early 80s. But then when I went to Games Workshop, for some reason, I don't really know why, but nobody was really using reference. We were all just had this kind of chaotic way of doing the paintings. So you'd have, we had a big library of reference books, but you didn't have a computer next to you. You just had an easel and your materials. It was all traditional. I just kind of really honed in that talent there, maybe. And you're working along guys with different skill sets. There's an artist called Adrian Smith who was amazing at lighting. He could just seem to be able to light stuff from his head without any reference. So I was picking up, you know, little tricks all the time along there. So it was a long sort of process of just working like that. But I think also more recently I've become aware of is that what I was doing then and still doing now is to always be looking to break things down to the sort of simplest form, especially when you come to lighting and perspective. Mm-hmm. And if you can consider that when you're placing it, then it's really beneficial to the end result, you know. Because if you don't break it down into elements, like anything, it's like painting a room, you know. If you go, this is huge, I've got to paint this whole room. You go, okay, I'll do that wall first.
Right.
So I always think, you know, don't be too intimidated. And people have said that, I've done big oil paintings of Battle of Waterloo and things like this. And how do you tackle this? But it's all a matter of one chunk at a time and keep chipping away at it and obsessively doing it, you know.
For the kids or the, you know, the young adults that are struggling with just getting something out from their imagination, they can simplify forms by looking at photographs, and then when they want to draw something from imagination, it's ugly. Is there any advice?
I think one of the keys is building a visual library, obviously in your memory, but a lot of mine was done from real objects or reality, not always from 2D or, you know, like costume design, always from a computer game or a movie. It was always like going and digging out the historical stuff or going to a museum or drawing people I knew, or say you're doing observational drawing of faces, is what you're teaching yourself is the huge range of faces and the huge variety in facial structure and huge variety in anatomy and things like that. So what I think sometimes people get stuck in is they're stuck in a trap because maybe they've got the Bridgman book or something and they understand that, but then they can't add any character to it because really it's as advanced a level as they might be, really, it's just a set of blocks stuck together. You've got to be able to take that and apply it in a way that's characterful, haven't you? And I think if you learn that stuff and then you go and do life drawing classes or then you do studies from your friends, what you can start to do is you can understand how those fundamentals apply in real life. And then for me, I think I've also got a very good memory, not like John Gee level where you're talking about, you know, a huge sort of library. But I have a good memory and a good ability to recall stuff. And for me, one of the things I try to do is to try and hold the image in my head of something I've seen. I'm not trying to get it on the paper exactly what I'm seeing there, but I'm trying to just hold on to that element that I've seen or has inspired me, just for, even if it's just for a few minutes as you start the sketch, and then hope that some of it's in there. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, there's no real shortcut. It's repetition and practice, really, as well. And, you know, like when guys come to me who are 20 and say, oh, how did you get so good? And you go, well, I'm 48. I've done it twice as long as you. And I wasn't always this good. I'm not saying I'm really good. I'm saying I wasn't always at this level. I'm okay. But I wasn't always this okay. I wasn't always this mediocre.
I wasn't always this positive.
Yeah.
So, but you were born in the UK, right?
Yeah, I was.
Okay.
But my dad was really, it was funny really, because his brothers changed his name to John, but my dad really held on to his Polish heritage. My dad's name's Jan.
Yeah.
And my name's actually Jan, because they named the oldest child after the father. So they did that for a year, and then they're like, this is really confusing. Let's just call him Carl.
So are you still Jan on your
birth certificate? My full name is Jan Peter Carl Kopinski.
Ah.
But yeah, so my grandfather came over in World War II, fled Poland and flew in the RAF bombers. And that's actually had quite a big influence on my work, I think, because I was always interested in that military history. Like, I'm always drawing guys with flying goggles on. And I loved books on aeroplanes.
Did you like see his photographs and stuff?
Or no, he never really. I think we think he had to bomb his own city. So he never really spoke about it. And he was an awful cook. I remember that. He'd have a bag of raw mushrooms that he'd peel, carton of milk on the windowsill to go sour, and then he'd drink it. And then microwave hot dogs, I think, cook, go around here.
Oh, that sounds good.
Microwave hot dog.
I microwave hot dogs all the time. Too lazy to boil them. My other joke question was, how many sexy angels and sexy vampires have you drawn for people on their magic cards?
Do you know what? I think people have gave up because I don't do sexy very well.
Oh, you don't do sexy?
I'm not very good at sexy. I'm quite, you know... I'm not a sexy man. You know what I mean? My brother's a sexy man.
Wow. This conversation is...
I'm just not good at... Like, also, I've got a young daughter.
Yeah.
Who's 13. And I don't want to do, like,
right.
women going into battle in chainmail bikinis.
Yeah.
And go, well, what? Yeah. What? Of course that's how they fight.
Yeah, but I was watching another interview with you. You were at some convention, and you said that everyone's asking yeah. for you to draw them sexy vampires.
It's true, yeah. And also, they'll ask you to do it on a magic card with a yeah. Sharpie. And you're like, but this is, like, this big, and you want me to turn a goblin into a sexy vampire with a Sharpie. Like, really?
How do you do that?
I don't.
I
just make a bad job of it, usually. Not intentionally. It's pretty hard. The first time I did a magic convention, the guy, and I don't play the game, I knew nothing about it. So I went there and the guy said, oh, do you do alterations? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, yeah, draw over the picture. And I thought, I've spent a week on that. You want me to just scribble on it? He said, yeah, put Mickey Mouse ears on him. I'm like, what? This is really confusing. Don't you like the artwork?
Don't you like it?
So, but now I've got quite good at it, actually. It'd usually take a little set of acrylics along or some acrylic paint pens and, you know.
There you go.
Can also put like a coat of, I use Liquitex matte medium when I'm painting a lot for the commercial stuff for oil painting. So if you put a coat of that on it, holds the paint
better. And it's transparent.
Yeah, yeah. I got that from James Gurney's books. So I use that technique on almost all my commercial oil paintings. But I've drawn a lot of sexy vampires and sexy angels. I also had a guy who just wanted me to draw spurting.
What?
Spurting. Yeah, you know, it's like...
Yeah, I know.
the stuff that comes from the end. He wanted that on there.
Did you do that?
I didn't want to, but he was really insistent. So I did a very quick job.
Peer pressure.
Yeah. And then three
come
years,
on, man.
Yeah, come on, draw me a. He was there just shouting, draw me a, draw me a, all right, draw me a.
Oh my God.
And then the best bit was, I went back to a convention maybe 3 years later, and the same dude turned up.
Oh no, you're like, not you again.
Yeah, he said, don't worry, I want you to draw this time.
Oh my God.
I was like, this is awful.
Turn off the cameras.
It was awful. And I did it.
You did
I'm
it.
Such a whore.
God damn, are you sure you want this recorded? Okay.
Back on track. Back on track.
Trying to steer this. We also were joking about talking about your biggest mistakes.
Yeah.
You want to talk about some of your biggest career mistakes?
Career mistakes.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've made any really big career mistakes.
That's why you're so popular.
Yeah, I'm popular.
Yeah.
No, I think what I've done is I've done a few projects which I've not enjoyed. For example, I've worked on movie stuff that I've not enjoyed. But I always thought, oh, it's going to be great working on movies. Yeah. But in actual fact, it was actually really boring. And, you know.
Really?
Yeah, because this was just one or two projects. But sometimes they just want you to do versions of a pocket or something, you know, on a costume. And you think,
they hire Carl Kapinski to draw a pocket.
Well, it kind of, you know, you kind of start by doing the big idea.
Okay.
And then it we love this design. And then suddenly, 2 weeks later, you're doing the pockets. And you're thinking, I'm pretty sure you've got a better pocket guy than me. You know, but it's not a mistake. But what it's made me learn is that some of these industries that maybe are really appealing and you think, oh, I got to work in there. Sometimes it's not sort of inspiring.
Yeah.
But also on the flip side of that, I learned that say if you work in pre-production, I worked with a guy a lot called Loic Zimmerman, who was working with Moving Picture Company. And this was a huge surprise to me, but he actually got me on Disney early pre-production stuff. I even did designs for the Genie for Aladdin. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, well, you want me to do? And he's like, no, because it's live action and, you know, your stuff's realistic and it's great for the producers and everyone to see, you know, some iterations of that. So,
did you know that it was going to be Will Smith when you
No, it was pre-Will Smith.
That.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So there's all kinds of ideas thrown in there. And it was interesting because also you had access to the folders so you could see the other artists who were working on it and their ideas.
Cool. How many did artists did they have?
When I was submitting for the Genie stuff, there was maybe four or five other artists. But it was very early in the project, you know, pre-production stuff.
Did they pick one artist to then go and take it from?
I don't know really what happened, but what I found with one project I worked on was Artemis Fowl. And I started with Loic doing pre-production stuff, and they liked it and got me on board for production. And that was interesting because you kind of delve in deeper into those initial ideas and starting to work out, you know, it's quite nice to be able to take that and develop those initial ideas and develop them and see where you can go with it. But yeah, I mean, mistakes, I've made a few. There's a song there, isn't there? I know one was staying at Games Workshop for longer than I should have.
How long?
I was there for 7 years. We had 3 years. 3 or 4 years, where it was really superb art team, you know, really a great bunch of guys. And then you also had sculptors, writers, all in the same studio. So it was really sort of thriving environment. But after 3 years, 4 years, I started to be put back onto projects that were being re-released. So you're redoing stuff you'd done already.
Mm.
And I was getting bored of drawing skulls and spikes on everything.
You just redo the same painting again.
Yeah, or no, a lot of the work was for, say, what they'd call a codex, so the rule book for it. Mm. They'd do a re-release of that. Maybe they'd had a new product out for it, and so they'd redo the cover or use some old work but need new artwork. And this isn't a Games Workshop. It's my mentality. I found I was starting to lose sort of enthusiasm and interest in it.
Mm.
And also, slowly, the art team started to disappear, so
yeah.
One artist left, another one. And so it was smaller and smaller art team. They were focusing more heavily on Lord of the Rings movie license that they got. So I just lost my real sort of enthusiasm and drive for it. So I wish I'd come out the other side a bit earlier and gone, you know, freelance. And another thing that I think the huge mistake I made was not finding the right college course for me. Because as much as I putting down that course I did, part of it's my own fault for not finding the one that suited me.
Right.
And I wish I'd made the most of those 3 years where I had the opportunity to just paint for the hell of it. Well, as I'm doing at the moment, I still don't get that chance to just paint for the hell of it. And it's a fantastic thing to be able to do. So,
is it because you take on all the job opportunities?
Yeah, and like I'm not super wealthy. I'm still have bills to pay and I still have a mortgage to pay. I've got kids, you know, so you're still beholden to client work somewhat. And although I've got a great following, I haven't quite worked out how to, you know, make that financially work for me. I'm also a little bit reticent to just be selling stuff on my social media. I think it would tarnish it a bit. I think people are interested because it's interesting, and I try to post regularly and I try to do stuff that's my own take on things. And that seems to be why people keep coming back and checking it. So if I'm just on there going, oh, another book out, I've got a print out, I'll come and buy my stuff. I don't know if it would start to water it down. I'm just a bad businessman. Well, I'm a terrible businessman.
People want
I know.
You to release new prints.
I'm still...
They want new books.
You know what? I'm still... part of me, I have imposter syndrome. I said this to Lim just the other day. I'm always looking over my shoulder waiting for someone to go, oh, it's you.
Yeah,
the guy who thinks he's good. the guy who thinks he can draw.
Come on.
And also, I'm really, really, really flattered that people are so interested. Because really, when I started putting sketches out, it was my wife who made me start a Facebook account, an Instagram account. She said, you've got to do it. She's got a much better eye for this sort of thing than I have. The sketches I wasn't going to put on Instagram, they were always processed stuff, or me just warming up in the morning or trying to get an idea out. And she said, oh, I think people might be interested. No, I don't think they'll like these. I'm just going to throw it in the bin. Oh, and I was throwing these things away.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and just like, oh, they're just for the big painting. And then when I posted them on there, people were like, oh, we really like this. It's really, can you show us more? I'm like, oh, okay.
I like the sketches better than the finished.
Well,
product.
For me, that's what interests me as well as an artist. A lot of the time, you see a fantastic painting, but you want to see the process and the workings in there and the you know.
But even as a standalone product on its own, I just like the look of sketches.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And I think there's that nice instantaneous feel to it, and they have energy, and you know, it's been a real revelation for me, because I've said this before in other interviews, in a way my social media following has sort of morphed my career. I'm still doing the same thing, but I'm not naturally very confident about my artwork. So it really helped me sort of feel like I was doing okay. And that this stuff did have a value and was interesting. And it was same with seeing when I saw John Geese start to put stuff out that was just sketch-based.
Yeah.
I was like, so, you know, you can put this out and it does have its own place. You know, it does have a sort of relevance and value. And then the more people kind of showed interest and fed it, you know, I started to do more and more and really started to focus on it. And then they asked for sketchbooks. So then my wife said, right, I'm making a sketchbook. And I'm just sat there going, oh, it's really hard work making a book. I can't do that. And drawing. And she's like, give me all your sketchbooks. And she went and got the first books printed. So before I did Big Kapinski, I got like self-published books. So they're not as high quality sort of paper and hardback, but there's still a way to get what I'm doing out. And they're another driving force behind the sketch projects that I do.
It's funny hearing you say that it's hard work to make a book when you draw 10 hours a day. Is that not work to you?
No.
Like, no.
No.
No, it's just like...
It's just not... It's not even fun. It's just what I do.
Oh, really?
And it's not like I'm there going, woo, I'm drawing. I'm just doing it. You know, I just do it all the time. It's like if I don't draw, the only times I'm not drawing is weekends I'll have with my family. You know, morning and evening I spend with my kids. But everything in between is drawing or unless I'm on the bike. There's a work-family balance. I take my kids to school every day and I don't start work till maybe 9. But then I'm working till 11:30 at night.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm just sat with a sketchbook and maybe Netflix and enjoying it, really, having fun, you know, doing the thing.
So is that the next goal in your career, is going in that direction where you're trying to sell your own stuff? Or are you going to still try to stick to the freelancing?
You know, I like the freelancing in a way, because what it does is it gives me an outlet for doing more involved oil paintings and things like that. I do a lot of work with a company called Cool Mini or Not. So I did a whole series of paintings for Narcos, their board game. So I had
Narcos?
Yeah, yeah. The TV
show. Like the Netflix show.
Yeah, yeah. So I did like maybe 32 characters, all based on actual characters, then two
this
covers.
This is a board game?
Yeah, yeah.
Where do I get this?
I think they've got it at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah. I did Godfather with them, with Marlon Brando on the cover and a bunch of 1920s gangsters. So I like that stuff because it's giving me an outlet for the oil paintings. I think like a lot of artists, whether it's music, drawing, painting, whatever, the great thing that social media has allowed me to do is to have a bit more control over what you're doing and have an audience to potentially sell stuff to and give you that ability to explore, you know, stuff that maybe client-based work wouldn't. And the weird thing is now, because I've got a big following, you get clients coming to you going, can you do that thing you do on Instagram for us? Yeah. So now you're like, before, a client, if a client came to me, I'd think, okay, I'll get Photoshop out and I need to do this and I need to make it nice and shiny for them. And now they're just like,
oil it up.
Yeah, do that. Yeah, 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 give a bit of makeup in. But now they like do that gritty, messy, sketchy thing you do, which is great because it's more me. It's more naturally me. Yeah. So I gave up digital maybe 3 years ago. I was doing quite a lot of digital for Magic the Gathering, but I was really frustrated with it. And I felt like I was not a naturally good digital artist. I haven't grown up with that as a medium. So it was always playing catch up on trying to make it feel like a pencil or paint. It was always a bit of a...
I'm the same way.
Yeah. I mean, I love digital art. There's some fantastic... Even watching Katsuya Terada and how he was using... Procreate. I was lucky enough to share the Airbnb with him, which was like proper geek out. I was telling Christian, I sent the email saying, no, is Terada going to be there?
Oh, he'll be there.
Yeah. So, he'll be there. You're sharing a house with him. Shit. You know, I'm like, oh my God. Because when I first got his book, I was like, it just blew me away.
Was that?
This was maybe even pre-Games Workshop. I remember him releasing a book that was in a brown slipcase, and it was full of painter sketches he'd done and Monkey King covers, and it just blew my mind. And I watched Blood, the Last Vampire. I think I may even been on VHS cassette. I'm not sure, but... And so when she said, oh, yeah, he's going to be there, I was like, oh.
Did you guys share a bed?
No, he wouldn't. No, I just waited outside his door for him to wake up all night.
You made him breakfast?
No.
To get him to wake up earlier?
Yeah.
Get the smell going under the door.
Katsuya, are you awake yet? Yeah, and that's the other great thing that I'm really kind of thankful for. I'm getting to sort of spend... time with people whose work I genuinely really admire is just fantastic. My brother draws a lot, Stefan. He's a really good artist himself, a digital artist. And we just used to sit there and sketch together. You didn't have to talk. You're just hanging out, sketching. Yeah. And that's a nice, I missed that feeling when he moved away and I moved away. And when I hang out with John Gee, it's like last night we had Netflix on and
just chilling,
just sketching. And then I look across and Jisoo's joined us and there's just three of us on this black sofa with Netflix on, not watching TV, drawing.
So then you do want to continue doing the freelance stuff then, right?
I think so. But I'm lucky because now I can pick and choose my clients a bit more. You know, backing off the ones that I don't enjoy so much and focusing more on the others. But then occasionally a job comes along where you're like, well, I can't turn this down. It's, you know, great. I think that's why I do so many hours in the day as well, to try and fit it all in, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you do for Peter Jackson?
Peter Jackson. Yeah. That was interesting. That was not actually originally commissioned for Peter Jackson. Oh. It was commissioned for people who were trying to renovate part of the battlefield of Waterloo in Belgium. The Battle of Waterloo in 1815, there was a famous area where one of the battles had took place, a building, and it had fell into disrepair. Uh-huh. And there was a project to raise money to try and turn this into a visitor center. And what they did was they commissioned a bunch of artists to produce artworks that would then be sold as prints to raise money. So I did that. You have to understand I'm seriously nerdy guy, really. You know, deep down, I'm pretty serious geek. So when this project came along, it was like geek heaven, you know, going to museums, checking out what cannons, checking out how they raised the cannons to make them point in the right direction.
And you had to be very accurate, right?
Yeah, because you're selling to a historical market. The people who buy this are the guys who know all this stuff. So what I rapidly realized was you had to do your homework and get this stuff right. So I spent maybe a year on two paintings. I think 45 by 30 inch, something like this, and in oils, were made into prints. And then the guy who commissioned me sold them on to Peter Jackson's wife, who'd bought them for Peter Jackson for Christmas.
Oh, okay.
So they were, it's, my paintings were Peter Jackson's Christmas present.
Got it.
Yeah. I think maybe he just served turkey on them or something. Used them as a plate. But no, I've got friends who worked at Games Workshop who actually know him, and they said he's got this mad secret oak-clad room. I think it may be even just behind a book.
You know, behind a book?
You like a library.
Oh, you pull a book and it opens.
Secret door, yeah. And he's got...
That's what this behind you, that's a secret door.
Really?
Yeah.
Can we go in later?
After the cameras turn off.
Awesome. So yeah, I think they're hanging in there somewhere. Awesome. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So for the painting that you did they have a historian check before?
Well, the guy who was doing it, was the project was very knowledgeable, and there were a couple of other guys who were involved, so I was always cross-referencing it. And the people who knew Peter Jackson, who are good friends of mine who make historical miniatures, called Michael and Alan Perry, they are incredibly knowledgeable. So I was cross-checking every stage. And there's a lot of books out there. There was even a diary kept by the British captain that I painted in one of them. So I read the whole diary. And so it was a really sort of in-depth thing. It was a really interesting project to work on, actually. It's hard to find a market for that, because if you spend 4 months on them, and I got paid maybe, you know, $4,000 a painting, it sounds good. But, you know, you break it down, it's $1,000 a month, really, which is okay. But I'm pretty sure I could get that working, you know, in a garage or something as well. So it wasn't incredibly lucrative. You've got to find someone who's prepared to pay a premium for these things, which is hard, you know.
Yeah. And how do you find that? Do they mostly come to you, or do you?
I don't do those things anymore. I had to really knock it on the head, because it was just, like I say, I just couldn't find a market for it.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's such a niche thing, you know. But again, it was interesting and I enjoyed it, and it's informed a lot of what I do now. So I love painting horses as well. That's another...
It's a big market for that.
Yeah. And in Dubai and places like that, racehorse owners, they're all incredibly wealthy. But I didn't do that. Bad businessman.
Good artist.
Bad businessman.
Your wife seems like she's a good
businesswoman. She's great, honestly. Really, Tara, my wife, is like, I don't think I've reached the level I'm at without her pushing me, and you know. And she does a lot of the shipping of things and back at home. And so we work together as a team, really. You know, she's always coming up with ideas, and I'm like, I don't know. And then she'll do it anyway. I'm like, that was a good idea, wasn't it? Yeah.
Make $100,000.
Yeah.
Like, wait.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got it all in her account. Like, where did that money go? Was my idea.
You sue her for copyright infringement.
Yeah. Well, that's my IP.
Cool. Well, if people want to support you, what's the best way to do that?
Just
PayPal, Venmo.
Yeah. Just direct to my bank account. Just send me cash in a brown paper envelope. No, I think the best way is on my website. I have various products on there. I've got my books on there. Trying to get more prints out on there. So, and also people can ping me messages and say what they're interested in, because a lot of the time I am a little unsure as to whether they want a big print of a Monkey King sketch I've done or not. So being a small operation, somewhat of a risk to go and get 300 prints done.
Yeah.
And then you sell two. So, but the best way they can support me is just keep following me on Instagram and keep their eye out for the things that I'm putting out there. But
the book right there, you know, is it?
Do you want
for
me to bring it in?
Yeah. Is that for sale on your website?
It's on for sale on my website. So for sale through Super Annie's website. It's for sale through Amazon. And it's global, man. But it's a nice book, actually, because it's the first. The ones I've published, I've got volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4 that I've self-published, which there's only volume 3 and 4 available now. So this contains a lot of 1 and 2, which is out of print, and it also has a large color section in there. So it's the first time I've managed to get a lot of my colour work into a book. But actually, when we start going through it, I realise there's a huge amount of work I've done. Like, I've done about, I think, 170 magic cards in total. So there's just vast amounts of work that I need to get together into a big book, really.
And most of those are original oil paintings, right?
No, this was
a lot of them are digital.
Yeah, a lot of them were digital, which I kind of regret now.
What percentage do you think were digital?
Maybe 65 to 70% digital.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you sell the originals that you?
I sell the originals of magic cards. I've actually got maybe three that my wife's
just kept.
She's selling them. I think she waits for me to go away for a convention and sells them.
Where? She just go outside?
Yeah, we have like a little garage sale, you know. Just out on the street with lemonade and paintings. No. With magic cards, there's a lot of Facebook activity. So there's pages where collectors are all together.
Yeah.
So she'll once a card's published, it's often a good idea to get it out there fairly quick while it's fresh in their mind. So she sends a message out to those guys. But I've considered actually selling some original sketches.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant sketchbooks. I'm like, oh,
No, in total. No. But part of me is a bit sad to do that because they feel a bit like a diary. So most of the sketches, I can remember where I was when I did them. I don't know. It's something I might look at doing in the future is just putting a limited amount of sketches up for sale. I don't know. And also one thing I'm trying to do more of is I'm trying to do some slightly bigger ink sketch work with multiple figures and things like that, so they're not held together in a sketchbook, as it were. So I think in future I've got a few at San Diego that I'll probably sell
at Comic-Con.
I've got maybe 20-25 pieces that I'm prepared to sell for the right price. Four pack of beer and a Hershey bar.
I'm buying all of them.
And we can drink the beer on the street outside afterwards.
I can have the beer and the drawing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I get the Hershey bar, though.
Yeah. You can have the Hershey bar. Cool. Well, it was a pleasure.
Real pleasure, Stan. It really is a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much. Go to, what's your website?
www.karlkopinski.com.
Only two
Very Ws. Original.
Two Ws.
www.
Cool. And Instagram, and then buy his book, and then send him money in the paper bag.
Yeah, that would be great. Really would.
What's your home address? They need to know where to send it.
I can't give that out.
All right, send it to my studio, and I'll pass it along.
Yeah. Send it to Stan. Did you get that money, Stan?
Nah,
it's all gone. It's all gone.
Spent it on Hershey's and beer. All right, guys. See ya.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.